2 Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better.
Now, the thing about having small businesses is things change all of the time. And occasionally you go, hey, that's useful to me. And occasionally you just go, holy hell, I didn't even know that was possible. I have met someone today who I'm going to introduce you to who is in the holy hell, I didn't even know this was possible category. His name is Rob Van Perch, and he has a company called AR Vision, and this is going to rock your socks. Rob, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, this is sitting in that space where it's so new and so cool, you're really only talking to early adopters and people who've got a bit of a vision. Yes. So you've got one foot in the old camp, which is how you put the food on the table, the bills.
That's it.
Which is very important for any business owner who's developing something new and exciting. Make sure you can pay the mortgage and then just go for it.
Keep the wife happy. That's the most important part.
Absolutely. Okay, wife's happy, kids are in school, food's on the table, and now you get to rock out with this amazing thing.
That's
now,
it.
AR vision, augmented reality.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
What would you like to know?
augmented reality to me says sci-fi, it says movie stuff, it says an avatar with blue people running around in another world.
Yeah, heading in that direction, definitely. So we've all heard of virtual reality, right? VR. And we know what VR is. It's, you know, you put some headset on and you become oblivious to reality. You're in a completely 100% virtual world.
And you run around looking like a complete numpty when your partner's videoing you to put on Facebook because your arms are waving and you look like a dick.
Pretty much.
Cool.
Yeah. And so if you don't get it right, you walk into walls and all that sort of stuff. Yes, it's quite hilarious. And VR has a lot of potential in a lot of different areas. Mm. Augmented reality is where we're implementing digital content in the real world, right?
Okay. De-jargon that for me.
Okay, so we've got a laptop sitting on the table, right?
Right.
If we wanted to look at a website or something like that, we'd look at the screen, okay?
Okay.
Now, we're in the real world. The computer's in the real world. Take away the computer and we put on a pair of AR glasses, we can still have a conversation, we can see everything that happens in the room, we can see each other, we can have eye-to-eye communication and content. We're not blocking the real world out, but we can have digital content essentially wherever we want it. We want to put a TV screen on one side out of the way, we can put it there, we just grab it and move it. There's no gravity, there's no limitations. We can have banners sitting underneath lights, we can do all sorts of different things. We could have somebody standing in the corner on the table, and only we could see it, or anybody who had the glasses on.
Okay. So you're talking Tom Cruise.
We're talking
in that movie where he has the cool gloves on and the screen's up, and they've got the pre...
Is that Total Recall?
No.
Minority Report. That's it, yeah.
So you're talking Tom Cruise, Minority Report.
We're kind of talking that sort of stuff, yeah.
So you can see through, you can see what's going on. He's got glasses on, he can see a screen, move things around,
exactly.
And everybody can interact in that space.
Exactly.
That sounds so cool.
It is cool. How do you put it into a business world?
Exactly.
That's the dilemma. So there's the basic stuff. We can put video on back of business cards or on the front of the business card.
Do I have to have the glasses on to see it?
No, you can do it over a phone. So you'd have an app, a viewer on your phone.
Oh.
So we've all got phones. We've all got smartphones. We've all got apps. We're all a lot more conditioned now to have multiple apps for things. So, you know, we can have an A floor flyer or a DL flyer. You know, let's say it's a plumbing company, right? And they put out a DL flyer. At the moment, you've got a very limited amount of space to be able to put information on.
And you've got to print the darn things.
And you've got to print the darn things and all that sort of stuff. Now, print media will exist for, I think, quite a significant period of time.
It's kind of cool to be able to still be able to pick up a book and do whatever.
You smack on that one. It's people want to physically see things.
But it's almost become a disruptor in a digital world. You know, to go to the letterbox and pick up something, you think, oh, look at that. And it's got lumpy mail or it's got whatever else. It's almost like a curiosity.
We've actually almost come full circle into a certain degree where before we had all the technology we've got, you had no other option to get print media. Now with all the digital capability, people are actually kind of going back and going, how can we do something different in a marketing sense? So let's actually put out a flyer.
I mean, when was the last time you actually received a handwritten birthday card or thank you card?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's just so much more special. So yeah, carry on, sorry.
That's it.
That's not where we're going.
No, that's not where we're going. But we still come back to that flyer has a limitation because it's only got two sides or if you've got a trifold, you've got still two sides when you unfold it. So you can only present so much information, right? With AR, we have the ability to have almost infinite amount of information being able to be provided. So imagine a flyer that's got a person on it that's telling you about a new solar hot water system or something like that, right? It solves the problem to the customer. It is a viable product. It's cost effective. But we all have questions. We go, well, that's only a minute piece of information. I want to know more about it. How does it work? Why is it so much more effective? Blah, 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 blah. With AR, you can have an AR overlay of digital content, and you could have that person, when you look at them through the phone or a pair of glasses, if you have one, you can actually have them come alive and they look up and you go, hey, let me tell you about this thing and how it works. And a model comes up on how the system works and why it's more effective. So you have almost infinite capability, whether it's promo videos, you know, if you're a real estate agent, for example, you can have walkthroughs or fly-throughs on the back of your business card.
I was going to say, how does that differ from watching it on YouTube? Because they've got the new technology now. You walk through the 3D this.
That's
and
right.
Look up,
that,
look
that,
down.
That content is already being created. Mm. But how it's delivered, we're still tied back to having a computer sitting at on a TV screen or having looked at on your phone. Now, with AR, you've got capabilities that extend beyond a business card. So, for example, how often do people drive past a house that's a display home or for sale, but it's closed and you can't get in to see it? But you don't have time to come back when there's an actual home open. But it could be the house that you want to buy. Scan the sign. And on the sign is a video of the fly-through. And you can sit in your car and look through your phone and look at the sign. The sign suddenly becomes a TV screen. That's basic stuff, right?
sounds pretty techie to me.
You're getting excited there, aren't you?
but you have no idea. But you do have an idea.
Yeah, I do have an idea because I get goosebumps when I start getting right into it. That's basic stuff,
okay.
Right? I know that sounds crazy, but it is. I've got that capability now. It's not complicated. If somebody provides me with the digital content, we can help them with the trigger. We marry it all up and bang, they've got a video on the display home sign or their garage door or whatever they want to do.
Right. Is that different than those little QR code things? Because they can take you to a website or take you to a spot on a computer, can't they?
They are and they aren't. So the concept between a QR code triggering something and a sign, we're using the entire sign and the entire design of the sign as the trigger. Those two, there is no real difference other than the way that it actually works, but the concept is essentially the same.
Okay.
The difference is with a QR code, it utilizes a browser, it brings you back to the conventional way that you would look through on a phone and all that sort of stuff.
Because it effectively takes you to a content page, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct, yeah, it's being delivered by what's on your phone. Whereas with AR, you're actually looking at the sign and the video is literally on the sign, right? You're not looking at it on your phone and it opens a browser. It's there, it's on the sign. But that's the
brilliant
beginning part, because that's why it's basic, because the cross between a browser and looking at it through your phone on a sign, there's a real cool factor, but there's a very short distance between the difference between the two. The difference starts coming into it when you start doing things like, for example, how many times have you seen somebody going up to an ATM machine and trying to work out how to do it because they're not that tech savvy, or they're trying to do something that's not just a normal withdrawal or whatever.
Or they've changed the damn setup and you can't find the button.
Or they've changed the damn setup and all that sort of stuff, right? And a lot of people out there get easily confused on how to work these things. Well, you imagine scanning a sign and a bank representative pops up as if they were really there, you know, a full 3D, 4D scan of the person. And they talk to you and go, hey, this is how you do this. What is it that you're looking for? And you can choose, like, I want to do this. And they go, just point your phone at the ATM machine, put your card in here, and it highlights, right? And it shows you where to actually put your card. Enter your PIN number here, and there's the and it highlights the keypad. You know, press enter when you're done, blah, blah, blah. You can actually guide somebody through the use of an ATM or any other potential thing, because we don't have to build a physical sign into the machine. We don't have to make the machine show and highlight different things and all that sort of stuff. We've got 100% control over the digital content because there is no gravity, there's no limitations. We could have that person talking to them in their native language. So you could have multiple languages. And it becomes customer experience and customer capability. You can take that beyond. We were talking earlier about training, for example. Mm. You know, being an ex-trainer, I've seen it time and time again where you're not able to train somebody in a practical sense in the way that you really should because, hey, it's too dangerous. But we give them a certificate to say, hey, you're qualified. Go out into the real world where there are real dangers, dangers that can really kill you or somebody else because you've got all the training you need. And suck it in the sea. And let's hope when you come across these scenarios that you don't die.
And
you file enough information away and you connect up enough of the practical and the theory together that you gain that bit of experience. So the next time you come across it, you also don't die.
Which would be nice.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess this space currently is held by things like the simulators.
Yes.
You know, your flight simulators. But that's not the same thing, is it? That's a completely immersive virtual reality like you were talking about.
It depends on the type of simulator.
Or a screen playing
It's a screen. So, you know, for example, a lot of the big companies like Rio Tinto, they've got their truck simulators and all that sort of stuff. And the trains and all that sort of stuff. The problem with that is that there's a level of virtual and real world application to it. They're uber expensive. And you can only have so many of them because they take up a lot of space. You can't take them with you. And so the running costs of those sort of things have limitations.
I have played in the train simulator for Rio.
They're pretty cool, aren't they?
That was the first of the first. It's been around for a very, very long time. But there is one, and it is huge. And they've literally had to physically record every track, every loop, everything, and multiple scenarios so that you can literally play the video and all you're doing is responding to a video.
Yep.
I can imagine the impact this would have where you could have flexibility, you could have sight, sound, you could turn your head. That would be just phenomenal.
Yep. I mean, in that particular case, you'd actually probably lean more a little bit towards the virtual reality as opposed to the reality because of the nature of what it is. When you talk about training, I'll go more in the sense of, let's say, a first aid course. You go into a first aid course, you lay down on the floor and you become the casualty, one of the students, and they've got to put you in the recovery position, they've got to go through things, Dr. ABCD and all that sort of stuff. In those environments, we can't drape a live electrical cable over somebody. We can't get them to lay in a real puddle of fuel with a sparking broken thing nearby and watch the thing catch fire.
Because that would be not acceptable.
That'd be really bad. And, you know, that'd break so many different things. But the reality of it is we're training these people to render first aid in this particular scenario to somebody who is in exactly that situation in the real world.
Mm.
So by not training them in that environment, you are not cataloguing the information in the person's brain properly. And so when they actually come across that situation in real life, they either freeze and don't act at all, or they go in and they don't think, and they go in tunnel vision, they rush in, and they end up becoming a casualty, potentially putting more people in danger and all that sort of stuff, and it goes pear-shaped really, really quickly. With augmented reality, we can have that real person laying in a real classroom with real students, but put a completely digital cable that's a live electrical cable that reacts exactly the same way a live electrical cable would onto that person, or put them in a virtual puddle of fuel that looks like a real puddle of fuel, and have things like that catch fire if you don't do the things correctly. You know, a lot of mine sites, for example, use low voltage rescue hooks, which is, you know, a plastic S-shaped hook. We can encode digital markers on a real hook and overlay that information in an augmented sense and link all of that up to a live electrical cable that's completely digital, that when a student has a real low voltage rescue hook in their hand, they go and pick up and move a completely digital, non-existent cable, and it's going to react to that rescue hook as if it was a real cable and drag it out of the way, right? So it opens up the door to be able to put all of these things that people should be being trained to do into the training capability without actually having any of the danger, because they're not actually going to get hurt if they screw it up because it's completely virtual.
They'll virtually set fire to their virtual patient.
That's right. Well, no, they'll virtually set fire to their real patient, but it will only be virtually, so they won't feel anything and it won't actually physically hurt them. But
all you
the
need
effect
now is sensor vision as well, so that you get the smell of burning flesh.
let's not traumatise people, you know. We want to get them through the training, not have to send them to a psychologist afterwards. PTSD.
That seems absolutely phenomenal and so sci-fi and so unattainable for a general small business.
Well, one of the things I'm trying to do is partner with, you know, some of the bigger organisations out there that are fairly innovative, and develop something that can be utilized. So, you know, when you talk, say, for example, let's talk an electrical company. I had a great chat with a District 32 member the other day. He uses a training company that he trusts a lot because that he's watched them grow. He's watched the level of training that they do and their competency and the way that the students come out of it when they're finished and all that sort of stuff. So he has a lot of trust for how they train. But even they know that there's a limitation to the practical components. And, you know, a lot of the apprentices and the students are coming out in the electrical field, they can work really well with stuff if they've just got to build it from scratch, picking up all the new pieces and putting it all together. But their diagnostic and problem-solving skills, when they come across an older board, you know, with a mismatch of all these different things, and their automatic result is, no, we've got to replace everything. When the reality is they don't, but they struggle to work through it, and they don't have as much of an issue of going, okay, so why has this happened? What happens if this happens? Boom, 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 boom. Because, again, we're dealing with electricity. So you're limited to what you can do as far as creating and causing faults without putting them at risk. You know, we could do the same thing. You know, we could create fully digital power boards and switches and RCDs and all sorts of bits and pieces and actually simulate phases dropping out, simulate wires being, you know, overheating or whatever they happen to be shorting out. You know,
things blowing up.
Things blowing up, yeah. You know, it's getting to the point now we can even get hold of gloves that have a whole pile of sensors that map your hand and actually give you an electric shock when you touch something. Can create visual, you know, flashes and things like that if you do something wrong. Even though it's not real life, it's as close to it as you can possibly get. And the capability of being able to give those people the highest level of training possible is massive.
I'm just thinking about, I mean, my son's a tradesman and he is, you know, very intelligent person, don't get me wrong, but he's not a book learning kid, never has been.
Most people aren't.
He's damn good at what he does.
Yep.
I can just imagine how much more rapidly or more easily he would have learned had he been able to play with the things first.
Yeah.
And just actually, but how much more interested he would have been as well, because this would tap into his, I like playing with things, but I like the gamification almost of it.
Yep.
And the engagement, I can just imagine perhaps some of these kids that are struggling at school, being able to learn this way would be so much more effective.
If I went and put on say a solid wall, a whole pile of optic fiber cameras.
Right.
And then I cast the image that those optic fiber cameras saw in AR onto the inside of the wall. And I gave you a pair of glasses outside of the room and told you to put them on and walk through the room and out the other side. You would walk straight into that wall because you haven't seen it. You don't know there's a wall there. Your brain can't see it doesn't register. If I did the same thing again, but you were standing inside the room without the glasses on and you could see that there was a wall there, and then I gave you the glasses and the wall disappeared. Your senses were telling you there's no wall there, but your brain has catalogued that there is information there that you need to pay attention to.
Dude, if you walk into that, it's going to hurt. Doesn't matter what your eyes are telling you.
That's right, exactly, because it's been catalogued. And if I told you to walk through to the other side, you'd start walking comfortably to begin with, but your brain would start firing,
yeah.
And you get slower and slower. And then you put your hands out and your hands, and you'd be walking around, and your brain would be going, dude, there's something here, like, and but your eyes are going, but no, there's not, until your hands hit the wall, and you'd be like, wow.
See, I'm really not Harry Potter. Exactly.
Exactly. That's the difference between seeing it on a screen and being in the moment and in the exposure of the experience. And that's why it comes down to user experience. You know, you go into a museum, we can create and recreate scenes of whatever it is, whether it's World War One, whether you're underwater, whatever it happens to be. And, you know, when you look in a museum, you go, great, I can see what it looked like back in 1852 and all that sort of stuff. But if you were there and you were almost involved in that time period and you saw people doing their thing, the experience is completely and utterly different. And that's where AR is going to become the catalyst of it being just a concept to people walking around with AR glasses on a regular basis.
So how on earth do you go from being in the fire services to running around putting fake walls in front of people?
When I was 13, I never wanted to work for anybody. And I didn't remember that until way later on in life.
So that's entrepreneur from an early age?
Yeah. But I left high school and went into the workforce, ended up in the fire services and fell in love with it. Absolutely fell in love with it. And that desire not to work for anybody at the age of 13 got completely and utterly thrown out the window. And the fire services basically dictated my life for the next, you know, however long. The chase of money saw me getting into training and assessing, that saw me then getting into the emergency services and crisis and disaster management, and ended up on the mine sites and all that. But I've always been a geek. Always been a geek.
You are in good company, sir.
Yes. Always been a geek. Towards the end of my time in the mines, I got tired of the politics. I don't do politics very well. And decided, well, what is it I'm going to do? Shall I go back to Perth and end up working my way back through and become a district manager, or, you know, go and drive a truck? I don't know. And that 13-year-old, I'm not working for anybody ever again, came flooding back.
See, I told you.
Yeah. Well, why didn't you listen to me?
But you need to gather those experiences.
You do. Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, do I think I'd be where I am now if I hadn't gone and done all that sort of stuff? No, probably not. Because, you know, everything you do in life is an accumulation of those experiences that leads you down those paths. So I don't regret any of it at all. But yeah, so I sort of went, well, what am I going to do? And I went, well, it's got to be something in the tech industry, because the tech industry, it doesn't matter what happens in the future. Tech will always be, you know, one of the surviving, driving forces of our existence.
As long as you're evolving with it.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, the industry as a whole is always going to exist to some form of fashion. So I went out and I started doing things like a diploma of information technology, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. Hated the networking, hated the cabling, hated all of that sort of stuff.
So networking, you mean as in computer networking?
As in computer networking.
Not coffee and cake with friends.
No, coffee and cake with friends and all that. I like that networking. That networking's good. No, the laying cables and connecting servers and all that sort of stuff. It's like, nah.
This isn't tech.
This isn't, well, it is. It's just not my type of tech. And then we got into the web design and the programming side of the course, and I absolutely loved it.
I could hear the Matrix calling.
Yeah, that's it. And that was it. I was done. So I was still working away. I was doing a lot of freelancing work on the side. You know, the beauty of night shift in the emergency services.
You have lots of time.
First 2 hours you're busy, the last 2 hours you're busy. As long as no one hurts themselves in between, you're bored out of your brain.
Which is the point of having a good health and safety system on site, is that people don't end up in your
front room. That is very, very true. I mean, we used to look after the town and a lot of the communities around and all that sort of stuff. But
and that's the cool thing with working with a company with a mature safety culture.
Yes.
Or a maturing safety culture. Yep. Yes. Cool. So lots of time, lots of
lots
space.
Lots of time.
So you could side hustle in the night.
I could side hustle in the night. That's it. And then, yeah, in the end, I went, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm going for it. I'm going to start my own company. And that's the rest is kind of history. So
would you advise, say, someone who's sitting in that space going, look, I really don't, I'm over what I'm doing, I want to do something different, of doing it that way? If they can have something that pays the bills while they're learning that transition, or just jump off the end and go?
We're getting into the business coaching side of things now. Mm-hmm. It depends, it depends on the person. Some people are employees. They only will ever want to be an employee. For them to start a business would be ludicrous, because they it's just not where they're conditioned to be. And that's nothing wrong with that. Come and see me, I'll give you a job.
So all of us who run businesses need employees.
That's right, exactly. Because, you know, we can't run our businesses without employees. So it's vital. If the person is a business person, then I got to the point with what I was doing where I realized that I was either going to stay an employee, dabbling on the side, or I was going to become a business owner. There's a point that you can't dabble on the side. You have to go full feet in. How long that journey takes to actually going full feet in is all very dependent on the person's circumstances, where they work and all that sort of stuff. At the end of the day, if you're going to start a business, just do it, because otherwise you'll never ever go beyond dabbling. So there's a massive risk to starting a business. But, you know, if you are an entrepreneur and, you know, you have that mentality, it's just time.
So other than the tech being super, uber cool, those skill sets and that understanding which makes AR Vision such a strong company and with just what looks like a fantastically bright future, is that journey that you've taken. The fact that you've been through the fire services, you've understood how training works, you get how people learn, and you can use that and apply it to people's small business journeys.
Yeah, I'd say that there's a distinct correlation to that. I'm not directly targeting specifically training, although that's a huge beast unto itself. I'm talking to a couple of Noongar representatives at the moment. We're going to do a cultural app that will be utilised all AR. He's got his grandfather who's been passing down stories and putting it on video, and we're going to recreate him into a 3D.
You're going to make him into an avatar.
Yeah, basically, but a humanoid one.
Well, I didn't mean you.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver running through the jungle with a tail. Yeah. But that's going to be an interesting challenge, because the cultural significance of having an entity that has passed on.
Yes.
There's going to be some real interesting things that happen.
I've ended up having a few conversations with people, and that side of it's an early day. But one of the things that is happening is the Aboriginal culture is the oldest culture on Earth. And all of their knowledge and all of their stories and all their history is not written down.
It's all oral.
It's all passed in story and song. And with the way the world's evolving, the way Australia's evolved, they're not sitting around the campfire anymore. They're not telling the stories. The stories are being lost. And the realisation is what's more important, not representing someone who's passed on or losing those stories altogether. That's the kind of conversations that are happening at the moment. I'm in the process of putting together an investor to, and I don't believe there's any in Australia, so this will be a first for Australia, a 4D volumetric image capture device.
4D isn't adding time?
No, so we're 3D, right? 4D is multi-axis.
Okay, so you can effectively walk around it or fly over the top of it or walk underneath it.
When you talk from a digital sense, when you talk 2D, you're talking about something that's drawn as a flat one-sided thing. So like a sheet of paper. A sheet of paper is, in essence, 2D.
Yep.
But in reality, it's 3D because it actually has
dimension, a
third dimension to it. Right, but when you talk, for example, in video or in games and all that, 3D, for example, like this cup is 3D. But when it's represented in a video game or a video, it's still only 3D. Whereas when you talk 4D with AR, you have an object in that cup. If you're looking at it, you could walk around that cup looking at it, and you can look at it from multiple different directions. You can look at it from above, you can look at it around. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Whereas in conventionally, the cup would be linked to the viewer's point of view. Mm. So the cup would actually move in relation to your viewpoint. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So effectively, the 3D side of things means that your brain recognises that it's a real thing, whereas the 4D adds your ability to walk around and see it from
different
perspectives.
That's right. Cool. Yeah. That's actually a good definition. 3D is almost an optical illusion.
Mm.
You know, you can do 3D logos and it's not 3D. It's totally flat, but it's the shadowing and the way that it's been created. Whereas 4D, you literally can walk around it.
Like those really cool chalk paintings those guys are doing.
I saw a Facebook thing that they've made a carpet. They've actually made a carpet that it looks like it dips and it's got holes in it. It's all uneven, but it's completely and utterly flat.
Yeah. The chalk paintings the guys are doing in New York where looks like they've got these big cavities and phenomenal.
That's 3D.
Yeah, it's...
But it's flat. So 4D is where you would actually fall into
you
it.
You could actually step into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Great analogy. Thank you.
So bringing that device in, which opens up massive doors when it comes to recording of history, being able to present information. Because at the moment, if we want to give or create anything in virtual reality or augmented reality and use it for training purposes or presentation or whatever, we can't video it because it's still flat. Right, we have to create it in as a 3D model with an animation and rigging it and all that sort of stuff. So to make a person move, and all the facial muscles and the eye movements and all that sort of stuff, it is incredibly time consuming. Just put somebody inside one of these devices, a big sphere, and capture them with 150 cameras. The software then stitches it all together, and you get that person standing there as if they were really standing there, telling the story and all that. You don't have to recreate anything.
Mm.
So it's more time efficient. So what it's going to open up the door is the ability for, you know, businesses to train in multiple locations simultaneously. You know, a lot of trainers or a lot of presenters, you know, they've got to fly around the country and go from point to point to point to point. Why don't they just go and stand inside one of these things and cast and project themselves onto the stage in multitudes of locations simultaneously.
And so everybody pops on their glasses in the audience, they can see and interact and you can go.
Well, you could with the technology we got there, because it's that type of environment, you could even go with a projection device that actually projects that data onto the stage. So you would be able to see it without having glasses on.
Like a hologram.
When we say hologram, people automatically kind of think it's Star Wars, see-through.
When I say hologram, I mean Red Dwarf.
Yes. Yeah, where you can't tell the difference that it's, you know, other than the occasional...
Well, he's got an H on his head. Other than that,
yes. So that kind of stuff. And then the person doing the presentation would have a pair of AR glasses on. And you'd have cameras picking up the crowd. So he could have, if that person was standing there presenting in 13 countries simultaneously, he could have 13 screens just sitting in his field of view, and he could just tap on one and bang, they're there, and he's then essentially in the room and being able to interact with the people in that room, answer the question, whatever.
So they could answer the question, he could have effectively eye contact with them.
Yep.
Okay, so barriers to entry for this, it sounds like it's extremely expensive.
Not really, no. I mean, we're still playing with the pricing side of things when it comes to the 4D image capture. That's you know, a little while away at the moment.
But definitely worth having a conversation with you about.
Absolutely.
If you're looking at going into this space or think that, I mean, even if you wanted to be using the technology, like, okay, cool, I would like to use this. Do you have a training company, or you could get a group of you together and you could develop a first aid program or anything along those? Is this something you could entertain?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that I wanted to do was, instead of being a software development company and you know, people come to me to develop the app and develop the software and all that sort of stuff specifically to them and then rinse and repeat for somebody else. I want to develop software where basically it's used by everybody. And each individual company can put in their own content and things like that.
The framework is
essentially there. So we're not rebuilding the same thing over and over again. So it becomes a more cost viable thing for anybody. Time frame part of it is designing and creating all the image assets and all that sort of stuff. But once it's done, they can be reused over and over and over again. So from a cost point of view, you know, getting a video on the back of the business card is cheap and chips, a couple of $100. You know, if you've got the video already, no problems at all. At the moment, I have to go by cost by design when it comes to the 3D modeling and all that sort of stuff, because that's where the time is. But that's what I'm working on, is to make it cost effective for people and make it a viable thing. And it comes down to return on investment.
Okay, so if people out there are listening and they're going, hang on a minute, I want to have a conversation about this, I would love to entertain the idea of maybe moving my business in this direction, or even creating a business that supplies this type of training, because they could do that as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can build it, they can train it, and there's, you know, effectively set up a whole new business to do this.
Oh, when you talk about a whole new business, oh, this will blow your mind. I actually want to find a person who's wants to own their own restaurant. This is completely left field, but this will blow your mind. If you manage to sleep tonight, I'll be surprised. It's pretty hard because I'm on a podcast, and giving the information away can be kind of dangerous.
Sorry, nobody listens anyway. Go for it.
I want to find a restaurant, a person who wants to own a restaurant or has a restaurant but is wanting to remodel it and re-theme it. And I want to talk to them before they do.
Okay.
Because this has not been done anywhere in the world, and it could be massive. Why do we go to a restaurant?
For the atmosphere, for the interaction, for the everything else.
Yep. You keep going back to the restaurant for...
You like the way it feels.
And the food.
There's some numpty changes changes the curtains, and now you don't like it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We as humans like user experience. We like it to be entertained. We go to restaurants that all look essentially the same. You know, you go to a restaurant, you've got similar layouts and things like that. You've got similar theming. And we go there because the food's good. We go there because people are, you know, they've been there before, or, you know, they're going because that's the people who they're going with, is that's where they're going, right? For whatever reason.
Or you walk in the door and they greet you by name like I do here.
Exactly. There's reasons we go back to places. Themed restaurants, let's say a medieval theme, people go to them because it's different, because they absolutely love it. You know, people who love sci-fi, you could do a sci-fi themed restaurant.
And how cool, you could create the bar out of Star Wars.
See, right. Now you imagine from a restaurant point of view, right? Let's just assume that all restaurants have good food, right? So we're all happy with the food. Why would you go to a particular restaurant when you could go to a restaurant that had a specific theme? So, you know, you ask anybody, there's people who love medieval, there's people who love sci-fi, there's people who love, you know, military and all that sort of stuff. But to deck out a restaurant in a theme costs hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. To then go and change it doesn't become viable. So what you see is a very successful themed restaurant start to drop off because people have gotten bored. So from a cost point of view, to re-theme a restaurant, it's not viable. But what happens if you didn't re-theme the restaurant? In fact, what happens if you didn't theme the restaurant at all? What happens if the room only had tables and chairs in it?
I've been to restaurants like that.
Just tables and chairs. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing on the walls. No colour. know nothing, right? Crazy, huh? But when you walk in the door, you get given a pair of AR glasses. And now you're in the middle of the Spaceship Enterprise or the Millennium Falcon, or you're on the planet Hoth, or you're in wherever you want to be. You're in an 1800 or 1400s castle and there's knights having sword fights around you and jesters juggling in the corner and, you know, all that sort of stuff. All with a click of a button.
That would be cool.
Right? So now you're not theming a restaurant to anything. It's Bathurst weekend. Could you imagine having a restaurant that the entire restaurant was the cockpit of one of the race cars?
Yeah, absolutely. You stumped me. I was just you know, the possibilities.
The possibilities of it. Could you imagine a restaurant that was sitting in the middle of the MCG on grand final day? The capability of having a restaurant that you can go and socialize in, have an experience in, but the restaurant owner doesn't have to be limited to the particular theme and cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars every time they want to change it. They just click a button and they've got a new theme.
But people would expect to walk in and see a bit of bunting and a bit of this and a bit of that. They wouldn't expect to walk into that. And as soon as you did that the first couple of times, it's like the West restaurant we've had over Perth, I'm not sure if it's still around, where you lock into the table and they pick you up with a crane and you eat 40 odd metres off in the air and chef and everything cooks there and then they bring you down again.
User experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it comes down to.
So if there's a restaurant owner out there or...
Yeah, that's who I really want to talk to actually. Is a restaurant owner, because that's, I don't want to own a restaurant, but I want to do this because this would be seriously cool.
That would be seriously cool.
It'd be something that you'd open in multiple countries and, just crazy.
Cool. So if the people who either want to own a restaurant in multiple countries or they want to take your experience of coming through this journey so that you get business, you get training, and they want to have a chat with you about that sort of kind of thing and the possibilities of looking at AR, so augmented reality, and the applications to even small businesses, what's the best way they can get hold of you?
arvision.com.au.
And everything's there.
And everything's there.
Fantastic. Yeah. Rob, thank you so much. I'm not sure I'm going to sleep tonight, but I'm definitely going to go down and, I mean, watching the stuff online was phenomenal. So if you want to understand what we're talking about, go to arvision.com.au, because we're proudly Australian, and have a look at some of those videos, and you can just see this in action. It's really quite phenomenal. Thank you so much for your time. We will definitely talk again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.